Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety, and those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service tick training. And by the Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, EFT Corporation, 40 plus years of innovation in donation and payment processing solutions, 911lifestyle.com, first responder burnout prevention and improved health, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those headphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green, and we are happy to have you with us once again. My guest today is firefighter Bill Dungy. He is from Brant County, outside about an hour west of or so of Toronto, up in our northern neighbor, Canada. And Bill's going to be talking with us today about resilience and the concept he developed called The Wedge. And he'll be here shortly with us. If you are looking for previous episodes after you listen to this one, you can find all our episodes either on our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org and just hit the podcast tab on the horizontal menu at the top. And that'll take you to our library of nearly 200 audio podcasts that we've done over the last 6+ years. And while you're on the website, we hope that you'll take a moment and sign up for our newsletter. We have one coming out in just a couple of weeks for the holiday season. And we do not send spam. We do not sell or give away your email address. We protect it as best we can under the laws of the state of Florida and the federal government. For those of you who like us on Facebook, we're so happy to have you. The numbers keep climbing. You've been very loyal, even during my absence because of my illness. We really treasure all those follows. So remember that we do come on there from time to time. We really enjoy seeing the new friends of the show and the podcast and everything that we do here, including our nonprofit. Now, many of you are listening to this podcast on one of the major podcast platforms, and many of those platforms allow you to leave a review of the podcast. And this is very important, not just to us here at Five Alarm Task Force Corp, but it's very important for almost all podcasters because the algorithm that the platforms use to determine where results of a search will wind up use these reviews or the star ratings as part of the algorithm. So the more positive reviews and the more listeners filling them out, the higher you'll be on the results of a search. Without those reviews and those star points, well, we're going to wind up much lower. And it's important that people can find Five Alarm Task Force, the podcast. So if you could just take a few moments, please, either leave a star review on your platform or a couple of words, a couple of sentences, that we would really, really appreciate that. And that's it. That's our business for this morning. We'll be right back with our guest, Bill Dungy, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training, LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training, LLC? Well, here are a couple of upcoming dates. November 5th of 2022. Insight Training will provide a 4-hour classroom hybrid training for the Central Rural Volunteer Fire Department in Norwood, North Carolina. Its location is 16 South Main Street in Norwood, North Carolina. Your contact is evan.faulkner, F as in Frank, A-U-L-K-N-E-R, 56, at gmail.com. Also coming up in December, December 14th, Insight Training will be providing a 3-hour custom webinar designed for Bentonville Fire Department in Arkansas on Introduction to Tactical Thermal Imaging. This event will be held online on December 14th. More details will be out soon. Remember, be sure to check their website, InsightTrainingLLC.com, or their Facebook page for registration and additional details. Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for firefighting TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using The Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter, at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live as fire. We're firefighters. We're law enforcement. But like everyone else, we have our aches and pains, sometimes from the job and sometimes not. We realize there are risks with this job. However, sometimes something is wrong with us and we don't know it. Now what do we do? Well, LifeScan Wellness Centers are dedicated to saving America's heroes. For most fire and police organizations, LifeScan Wellness Centers will send one of their mobile teams to assess every member of your department with complete and complex physical exams and blood work. Using state-of-the-art medical equipment, LifeScan staff members provide a multi-procedural exam, including cardiac stress tests, basic lab results, and ultrasound exams. LifeScan Wellness exams have saved the lives of dozens of firefighters and police officers across the country. They have found tumors, aortic bulges, lung problems, and more, many of which were asymptomatic. However, early detection allowed most of these colleagues to have their personal medical professionals mitigate the health issue that otherwise might have led to a darker time. For more information, please visit their website at lifescanwellness.com. Remember, LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. Hello and welcome to this video portion of our podcast. This is Steve Green, your host. I'm happy to have you with us and happy to be here with you. And if you're listening to the audio, well, you already heard the beginning of the show on the audio, but let me tell you about our guest today, Bill Dungy. And he is a volunteer firefighter, speaker, and writer from the county of Brant in Ontario, Canada. Yes, for those of our colleagues who are living down in Florida, it's a little bit better down here. But I've spoken to a number of people up in our brothers and sisters up in the North Country in Canada, and they are no different than we are about their passion and love for the job we do. Bill is passionate about formal resiliency training and maintains that operational readiness and maintains that operational readiness is a personal responsibility, which I couldn't agree with more. Bill is an IAFF certified peer fitness trainer, a peer supporter, and is a trainer for the Resilient Minds program developed by the Canadian Association for Mental Health. And we're going to talk about that later. 6 Feet is a platform that Bill has created to promote personal development for professional responders. Articles toward lifestyle and fitness accompany a free and open source goal setting program called The Wedge at https://6feet.ca, so again, and we'll give you that when we post the picture on the guest page as well and the bio there. Bill, thanks for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hey, thanks so much for reaching out, first of all, and second of all, for connecting the dots and getting me on your platform here.
Well, thank you. We're happy to have you. And again, I'd be wrong if I didn't put a shout out to my good friend, Nick Higgins of the Firehouse Tribune and Station Talk. And he was the one who kind of made the initial introduction for us. So my thanks to my good friend, Nick. Besides being a friend, he's also one of the volunteer members of our board of directors for the nonprofit Five Alarm Task Force Corp. And by the way, folks, I'm going to take a moment here just before we start with the bill. I'm down here in Broward County, Florida, and even though I live in the city of Coral Springs, we're all part of the county. And one of our brothers, one of our bravest, you may have seen on national news, a gas tanker explode on the Florida Turnpike just over a week ago. And our brother, Brian, I'm just going to use his first name, and his wife were caught up in the explosion when the tanker blew up. He was seriously burned, got out, and then returned to rescue his girlfriend. They are both in critical condition in the local burn center, and we keep them in our hearts and our prayers. And you can, you might be able to find online, since I don't want to give his name, last name out on the air, but a GoFundMe page. And just look for the name Brian in Florida. Or firefighter with Broward County Fire Rescue. And you can help them. You can be a big help to them. We made a donation. We just mailed our donation directly to them through the IAFF office and for the local for Broward County Fire. And we hope that you'll reach out, especially if you're a firefighter, EMS, law enforcement, that you listen to this. And reach out to help our brother, Brian, who we're hoping and praying that he'll make it through. They'll both make it through. It's not going to be an easy ordeal for them, but let's just keep them in our hearts and prayers. So, Bill, let's talk about the wedge. Now, that could be interpreted many ways, especially if you still wear slacks and you get up from sitting in a chair for a long time. But let's talk about your definition of the wedge and what got you so interested in firefighter fitness, both mentally and physically?
Okay, great questions. So what got me started in firefighter fitness, mental and physical fitness? I'm a really new member to the fire service. I've been a firefighter for, if I was a little kid, I'd say just under 2 years to make myself sound older, so I'm brand new. And during my recruit experience, we drilled a lot on functional skills that would help us operationally on the fire ground. Where I came from before the fire service, well before the fire service, right now I'm a running an IT company because we're just a volunteer fire service down here in County of Brant, Ontario. And before I was an IT guy, I was a social service worker. That's where I come from. And when I went through the recruit experience, I noticed a little bit of a gap. There's this idea that, okay, here's a bunch of skills that you're going to need to use when you're out on calls, and we hope you'll be okay with the calls. But where I come from, hope is not a good plan. So I became, I guess, involved because I was already interested in the sphere, let's say, of operational readiness. So I became involved in formal resiliency training really, really early. That was something I noticed that we could add to future recruit classes. And that's one thing that I think people would probably say about me. I'm really good at dropping unsolicited messages into people's inboxes and being like, hey, I have an idea. We should go do this. You know, during the first day of our recruit program, we were shown that FDIC keynote by Mike Dugan, where he said, are you trying to make the fire service better for your having been a part of it? If not, why not? And I said, well, if that's the invitation from a guy like that, then I'm just going to throw ideas out there and start moving and shaking and see what I can make happen here.
Right.
The wedge is something that I developed a little while ago between me and a group of my friends. I'm super lucky that I have a little group of friends that gets together on a weekly or biweekly basis to really effectively hold each other accountable. We bring things that we're working on to the table and we challenge each other to follow through and execute on the things that we're working on. So I started putting together this idea of like, how could we formalize this like some sort of a challenge or some sort of a competitive thing that we could do together and work on all of our goals and the things that we're doing side by side toward one specific aim in a closed amount of time. Because that's the problem that, you know, everybody gets caught up with, is that we have lofty ideas, or what I usually describe as good ideas but poor technique for setting and executing on our goals.
Okay, on that, I'm just going to have to pause 1 minute. I'll be right back. Okay, 1 second. And we're back. I apologize for that small interruption. Continue, please, Bill.
Yeah, so this is something I put together to challenge a group of friends. And the more I started working on it, the more I recognized that I had some good ideas for what I wanted to work toward, but I lacked technique. So one thing that I pulled out of my college experience was this SMART system of goal setting. And if you've been around progress or trying to better yourself or fitness or anything like that, this system isn't new, but I believe I have a somewhat unique take on the deployment of this system. So the SMART acronym stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. And those are the key factors that are important to hit when you're designing something to work toward. I just spoke on this system up at the Canadian Association of Fire Chiefs Fire Rescue Conference earlier this year. And the one thing that I was really excited to bring to the table up there is this idea that there's four factors you can implement toward chasing that goal that you've designed, right? And so I like to say that time, effort, pace, and cadence are the critical points that you have to focus on if you're working towards something diligently. So time is pretty self-explanatory. That's the time that you're actually going to spend working towards something. Do you have the time in your schedule? Can you make the time? And everybody can make time. It's just decision-making. What are the things that would impede the amount of time you have to work on something? And can you mitigate those things in advance? Effort. This is the great delineator, right? Will you do what you've said you will do? Pace, to run through these things really quickly. Pace is a really cool one. I think you can steal seconds. I heard the Brothers in Battle say that on one of the FireX talks on YouTube, that being a firefighter is being in the business of stealing seconds to add time to where we need it, right? So here's an idea for using pace to outgun the competition. If you go grocery shopping and it normally takes the average person, let's say 30 minutes to go grocery shopping, if you plan what you need to get ahead of time, buy all your non-perishables on Amazon to have them delivered to you because it's the same price. And if you have Prime, they'll deliver it for free. And then move quicker. Like literally when you're in the grocery store, walk faster than everybody else in the grocery store. You can steal like 7 minutes away from that 30-minute grocery trip to add it to where you need it, right? And so take that idea, that philosophy, and try and figure out places where you can steal time. And lastly, it's cadence, right? Because what good is developing a system for yourself that is attentive to time and investing effort where you need it to be in a manner that's faster than the competition if you can't keep it up over time, right? So cadence is the kicker. That's the rhythm. That's what keeps you going. You know, cadence is one of those things too. I just found on Spotify, you can look up like army cadence marches and songs. And when you're out on a run, if you want to run 30% faster, look up the, it's the cadence called Hard Work, with these guys just as you're running, just barking in your ear, hard work, hard work. I love it. Anyhow, The Wedge is a program I've been running for free with firefighters from all over North America, usually through either LinkedIn or Instagram. We get together in really small groups, and it's a peer-led system that if you go to timeandeffort.ca, you can download it for free right now and just drop it into your crew. The system is meant to work on three things at the same time for 1 month. So we're going to design a goal using that smart system, one for our body and one for our mind. So something that's either physical, like getting your diet in check or adding walks after dinner or lifting 4 plates, like it scales to whatever you're working on. Something for your mind. So that's where you're going to learn something. We're either going to read a book or we're going to take one of the hundreds of free courses that are available on the FEMA website. And lastly, once your body and your mind are in check, that forms like the top end of the inverted triangle, then we can work our way down to the bottom point and work on our craft as firefighters. You already know what you're bad at, right? Like if you ask yourself, what do I need to work on? You know what you need to work on. So that's what we're going to work on. We're going to pick something for our mind, something for our body, and something for our craft. We're going to work on it in a environment that suggests we should be accountable for our actions for 1 month. And that's the whole thing.
All right. So it sounds very simple.
Not easy.
Simple. In theory. But I didn't say easy, right? It sounds simple. I think parts of it will be easier than other parts. And I think the most important step will be the first step, as it always is. The first step is the first step on the next journey. And so the first step that you have quickly talked about really is the, it almost serves as the foundation. If you can move ahead and take the step to take care of these areas of your mind, body, soul, let's call it, then you can, you will play an active part in making yourself not only a better firefighter, but also a better person.
Yeah, a better human.
Exactly. Exactly. Because if we don't also remember to reserve, keep in our hearts compassion and empathy, and just like the announcement that I had to start this podcast with about a brother here in Broward County, Florida. We don't know him, but we created our nonprofit just for these circumstances, not to just give away money in a contest, but when a brother or sister and or their families find themselves in dire need, we want to be able to, and we have, send them a nice chunk of change that has been donated, either donated to us or that we've raised in our webinars, to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't use the online pay things because the fact that there's always a fee. Mm-hmm. And we would rather, well, if they, we were going to give $200 and then the fee is almost like, you know, it's $40-something, something like that, we'd rather give the $250 altogether to the our brother or sister or their family.
Yeah.
We'd rather give the whole amount. And so I think that one of the, hopefully one of the takeaways from what just your opening here is that we need to think about making ourselves better people. And that should be around the circle, being a better person, a better member of this family, a better person as a friend, and a better person as a firefighter. And what that also gives me as a firefighter or rescue or whatever. But, you know, it could be law enforcement. It could be paramedics and EMS people. This applies, can apply to across the board in public safety, because you're giving us the, not only are you giving us the foundation, but you're giving us the tools, teaching us the tools of how to do and how to accomplish these levels as well. And I think that's so important, because so many people are quick to say, they give TED Talks, stuff like that, and they tell you, oh, I do this and I do that and I talk about this. Okay, but where's my takeaway? What do I get to leave the lecture from? And listening to your opening, I think you're giving a great deal to each person who comes into the wedge and wants, you know, to improve themselves.
I think that's we're maybe jumping ahead a little bit, but it's a great point. I'm really passionate about actionable tools, because there's a lot of pamphlets out there. And pamphlets are great, okay? I'm not taking anything away from pamphlets, but I think there's something to be said about giving somebody a tool. You know, I train a grappling martial art called Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach says that techniques are tools in a toolbox. And you have to take a tool out to solve a problem. So if you get grabbed in this way, you have one tool, but you get grabbed in another way, you have another tool to solve that problem. And I'm really, really excited right now because 6 Feet, this platform that we've been working on up here in Canada, we just received not-for-profit status. And our first, I'm super, super pumped about it. Thank you. Our first big project is in 2023. We're going to host a conference here in Brantford, with our primary aim being actionable tools for building resilience in first responders and adjacent communities. So yes, we will have tables with pamphlets, but if you want to present at this conference, the merit of your presentation is being judged based on whether or not it's actionable. Will people take home something they didn't have before in that toolbox to solve problems? You know, and I think when it comes to generally, when it comes to resilience training, there has been an approach sometimes. This is not a blanket statement to suggest that this is the way it always is. But if your resiliency bulletin, let's say, from HR or something like that, comes down as this, or with a perspective or lens that's like, oh, you poor police officers, you poor firefighters, you experience so much trauma. I think there's room here to rephrase resiliency as a core skill. So this is something that we can actively train, just like throwing a ladder. Okay, so here's my example, right? So like when I'm helping out with our recruit class, before we go into a live burn, I introduce them and I wait right until this moment because I know everybody's, you know, feeling kind of hyper about this is our first live burn. And the emotional state is going to be higher in that moment because it is. So I introduce this technique called the physiological sigh. And the physiological sigh is a tactical breathing technique where you take two big inhales followed by one long exhale. And when you do that, that's the way that we breathe right before we fall asleep or when we're crying. So if you breathe like that, your brain doesn't have a choice. Your brain, there's all sorts of data that backs this up. People could look up Andrew Huberman to research some of the data behind this. But if you breathe like that, two sharp inhales and one long exhale, either before you encounter trauma and you know you're going to, when you're inside of a traumatic event, or after when you're decompressing, it tricks your brain into thinking you're falling asleep or crying. So you start coming down automatically. So I say, when you get off the truck and you see the rock show and you're like, holy moly, this is a fire. That's when you take three or four repetitions of this breathing and get in the game. This is something that people could take away and, you know, inside of a 45-second address during a regular training regimen or a regular training evolution, you could inject this part of resiliency training and take it forward for the rest of your career. If you know you're about to attend a call, you can hear it on the way and people are hyper on the radio, or it's a specific kind of call where you know you're about to encounter a traumatic situation. Everybody on the crew could pump out three or four of these breaths on their own time and get off the truck with, like, even let's say it made a 3 to 5% change. Isn't that what it's all about? Incremental changes.
Right. Sure.
You know?
Sure. Yeah. We're always told not, you know, don't jump with both feet. Put your toes in the water first and make sure there aren't any little things that like to bite you before you jump into that pool. And I think it's a great idea, great basis, because I can think back to got into the department in October, and in March or beginning of April of 78, toned out for a house fire, and we come out of the station and we could see the loom up already. So we knew it was a working fire of some kind, and it came in as a house fire. And, as we're about halfway there, the captain turns around and he says, Steve, I want you to grab the nozzle and the first part of the hose and pull it out. And I'm saying, did he say Steve? I'm the only Steve in the back seat because I've only been here for 4 months. Yeah. What am I doing on a nozzle? But I have to say, they did do very good training, you know, and in-house, this small volunteer department, they did great training. And the captain was next to me the whole time, but I, you know, just wasn't expecting it. So I don't think at that moment in time, I could have taken those breaths, because I probably grabbed about 17 of them just trying to undo the hose and get the nozzle up near the door we were going to make the knock from. But I think that if you train in advance.
Yeah, right.
And you plan this and you study the concept of this, I think it can hold because I even use breathing techniques with the kids that I tutor for their bar and bat mitzvah, because they're going to be nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you're going to be in front of family and friends and a crowd, and you know, we've done crowds as small as 20 something to as big as 300. You know, some of the affairs I've been through. So the concept, I think, is that if we can set ourselves a launching point and start bringing in these principles and these ideas that you're sharing, I think, or I really see that this could be a big help, because even the most senior firefighter in the house will come upon a scene in their last year or two that's going to wow them, have that wow effect. And so folks can say, well, he's not going to, you know, he doesn't need to do this kind of stuff. He's been doing it for, you know, 28 years already. That doesn't mean that he or she is any better than you are in dealing with emotion and prep and physicality and stuff like that. So I think what you're talking about, these levels, I think could be very, very helpful to anybody in public safety.
Yeah.
And, you know, and not every job's easy, and not every job is terribly difficult or terribly bad. We just don't know when we get toned out, we just don't know what that we're going to see when we finally get on scene.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of, I've said this on a couple of podcasts now, I'm a big fan of phrases. Phrases get repeated because they're true, right? That's why they hook. That's why they're in your brain.
Sure.
A phrase that I rely on heavily is that this is not a hobby, right? And so if I can be sort of forward about some of my opinions when it comes to things like training and things like complacency and things like operational readiness, right? And where it comes to organizing yourself to be ready to take on the responsibilities you said you would do, because that's the thing. Nobody pushed Bill to the front of the line and said, hey, you have to be a firefighter. Nobody said that. So when it comes to organizing yourself to be ready to tackle that, it's a personal responsibility. And I don't have a whole lot of room for people. This is where I get forward, right? I'm trying to like figure That's out okay. the right figure That's out okay. the right way to say it. The new guy, right? But I don't have a whole lot of room for people who don't have this need or thirst or hunger for new data. I'm like, well, if we were just comfortable relying on the status quo, polio would still be a thing. You know, so like
sure.
When these sure. when these tools, tactics, techniques, and procedures, TTPs, when these things come upon the fire service, the faster we can adopt these things, it comes down to pace again, right? We can outgun the competition. And in this case, the competition is deadly. Like there's no, you know, to use your word, Steve, here, you said the wow effect. Well, you know, we can multiply that and extrapolate it all the way to suicide. It's deadly. So like where these tools are present, the faster we can adopt it, the better we'll be.
Yeah. And you brought something up, which I really liked, and it's similar to Chief Brian Soler up in the Catskills. And he's the chief of a volunteer department, and he created what's called the Professional Brotherhood, because like me, he believes that every firefighter has to be professional, should be a professional. One gets a paycheck for it, and one does it out of the goodness of their heart to do it. But we still have to, whether you're a volunteer, part pay, career, WUI, we still have to be professionals. doesn't make any difference what label is used, because when they call 911, they're not saying, could you please send me someone who's like got 5 years experience to help me out? I have a small kitchen fire. No, they call the fire department. They say, get your butts here. I have a kitchen fire. And we have to be able to do our job. Again, whether we're career or volunteer or part pay, it doesn't make any difference. We need to do our job as professionals, because that's the way the public sees us. They don't see paychecks or anything else. They just want a professional show up at their emergency. And I think what you just said ties right into that. We have to be the pros all the time when we answer calls. That's what we have to be. And that means we have to be prepared to be those professionals.
I have a buddy who serves on a ERT team with our local or our provincial police force. And they have a banner above their gear room that says, what if everybody on the team was just like you? Right? So like, for all the good and all the bad, what if everybody was just like you? You know, you say that when people have a kitchen fire, they call the fire department. Well, what's underneath that is the people that make up the fire department. Right. So what that really means is they called you. They called you. Are you ready? Are you ready to be the person they think you are? You know, like I've had this idea percolating in my head for a article, but I'm not really ready to write it yet, because I'm still kind of figuring out the way I think about this. So exercises like this where I get to talk about it is really good, because it kind of you know, lets me build the idea out a little bit. But, you know, there's this idea that first responders get placed upon this pedestal as the H word, right? Like, something happens and people call you because first responders, in some people's eyes, whether you like to hear it or not, are viewed as heroes. So what that actually means is there's an ideal that people have about public safety personnel. And that heroic ideal is what you should be preparing for, because that's the person they think they're calling, right? Not that, you know, you, Steve, or you, Joe, or you, Brian, are a hero, the capital H, but they believe, and they, capital T, the public, the people who are having that bad day, are calling you because they believe you've prepared yourself to be what they need you to be. You know, and so I think that should underpin every fire department gym. That should, you know, they called you. That should be on the window at eye level when you're getting into the truck. They called you today. Are you ready?
And that's a great point. And the listeners and viewers, I hope they'll take a second here and answer that question to themselves. Oh, that's a good point. Boy, I never thought of it that way. I can just, you know, see people listening and or watching this and saying, whoa, that's a lot of pressure.
That's a little heavy for 11:30 in the morning.
But,
eh?
But it, you know what? It really shouldn't be pressure, because I know that when I went in, and I had admired firefighters, I never planned on being a firefighter, never crossed my mind until we moved to that place in North Carolina, and I was going to the market, and on the way down went by the firehouse, and the doors were open, just like I did in the greater Boston area. I visited firehouses. I want to go in and just see the red trucks, and next thing I know, I'm walking out with a application in my hand to be a volunteer. But once I did it, I knew that it was my responsibility to be the best I could be at that, because I didn't know anybody in the department other than the kid I met sitting next to me when the meeting we were voted in. I hadn't met anybody else other than the captain and the chief. So I wasn't going into a frat group that I could just hang out with. Hey, how you guys doing? I was going to be the new kid on the block, as was he. And so I decided that even though I worked 7 days a week, 80 hours a week, that I was going to be the best firefighter that I could learn to be.
Yeah.
And I always spent extra time at the station. You know, we didn't have any kids then, so it was just my wife and me, and she worked as well. So I was able to spend lunch hours and any time I could to get down there and suck up and absorb every single thing I could. I studied the trucks on my own to look, know what was in each compartment. And I wanted to be the best that I could be. And so did the kid that I met with, who's still my best friend today, some 45 years later. And I think that if you're thinking about being in public safety, and your focus isn't on being not just getting the job, but being the best you can be in that job, then you don't belong applying for that job.
Exactly. You don't belong at my table. Exactly.
It's the same thing with learning. You know, I'm a lifelong educator. So I always see places to learn. I was just talking to my daughter last night about somebody at the place where she works. And the fact is, and I've said this, and I have no regrets, that if I don't care how many years you have in as in firefighting, I can't speak to law enforcement because I've never been there. I did work with EMS part-time in North Carolina. But if you're not willing to be a continuing student once you join the fire service and continuing to learn, whether it's at your local, in your department, local conferences, regional conferences, or national conferences, or international conferences, then this is not the job for you. Because this job requires us to constantly be open to learning new tactics, something new that's dangerous for us that we didn't know about, like PFAS in our gear. We didn't know about this till about 5 years ago.
Yeah. Okay?
So we have to be the leaders. We have to be the professionals. We have to know what is that we're doing to the best of our ability. Nobody's asking for anything more than that. To the best of our ability, we have to be willing to learn and then put into practice what we've learned. Otherwise, we wasted our time in that classroom or in that training or whatever, if we're not willing to put that, what we've learned, into effect.
Yeah, you know, you started off by mentioning pressure and how sometimes pressure can be seen, or, you know, is generally regarded as a negative thing, that, you know, too much pressure and things pop, kind of thing.
Right.
But, you know, pressure fundamentally is what puts fires out. If we don't have pressure,
exactly,
that's a problem.
We don't throw buckets anymore.
No. You know, I coach little kid wrestling at my son's school. You know,
is it real wrestling or is it entertainment sports?
No, it's wrestling.
Okay.
You know, and we found out really early when we were coaching wrestling that the kids who show up to wrestle want pressure. That's why they're there. They want to tussle. So we would find ways, you know, for example, I'd give a kid a rucksack and tell him to lunge it around the gym while the rest of his team is doing burpees. So get to stepping, because that's pressure, right? You're going to feel that pressure when you get in on the mats with somebody.
Sure.
You're going to feel the pressure before you get on the mats when you're looking across the mats at the other kid you're going to have to wrestle. So let's practice pressure. You know, I think that's like, what are you doing being a firefighter if you don't like pressure? They called you. That's pressure, you know?
Right.
The
fact is that we take an oath. Okay. And it really doesn't matter what country we're in, but when we get sworn in, we take an oath. And the oath in any language says, I'm going to protect the lives and property in my community, in the district I serve. That's the oath. Now, if you drop an oath anytime something happens, well, then I don't know if there's a real, how do I know if you're really going to be dedicated to it or not? But if you take an oath that you want to live by, well, this is a great job for that. And as long as you keep that momentum up, that I want to be the pressure that helps other people, That's why they're reaching out to me. I have that pressure. I want to do it. Then again, I don't know if you're going to be a good member of the team or not.
Yeah. And tools, like we're talking about, actionable tools, like things that you can actually take away and not just a pamphlet.
Exactly.
That reinforces your ability to withstand pressure, right? So the one way that I like to describe this is, imagine that you are standing on top of your castle, like you're looking out, surveying your land inside your castle. And out along the horizon, you can see this clan of barbarians. And whether you like it or not, they are coming. They are on the way. Well, we could name that clan of barbarians trauma, or we could name it pressure, right? It is coming. So now it's about, we have to build a wall. And the key here is, you don't know how long you have before you interact with these barbarians, right? So the more bricks that we can supply to firefighters, and the bigger the bricks we can make, I think that's where I'm driving here, is I'm just trying to give people bricks.
That's a good way. You know what? That's a great analogy to use, because how many times have we heard, whether it was in our departments or listening to the audios or watching a video that somebody had recorded, when we hear people say, throw me this or throw me that. One of the things we should be throwing them and making sure they have is a really good brick.
Yeah. Better bricks.
Better bricks, right?
Yeah,
because that's what it takes to do this job. Okay,
yeah.
And you can use lighter bricks, but you can only do the job lightly. You can try to select bricks that are just way beyond your ability, and that's not going to help anybody either. But if you train and you find the right bricks that answer your need, then you're going to be a better person with that tool.
There's at this conference that I'm planning next year, I'm going to host a seminar where I'm going to infuse a lesson about grappling with what's called the four tools of building mental resiliency, or the big four tools. These big four tools were developed by the US Navy SEALs. It is goal setting, mental rehearsal, tactical breathing, and positive self-talk. These are unbeknownst to me. I was already doing this with the little kids wrestling, right? Like, we would get all hyped up and really engaged and really, really intense. I think public safety personnel are really, really good at being intense.
Yes, we are.
Because you have to be. That's the gig. You know, and I was saying the other day that we also need to be good at being calm, because we need to be good at being calm, right? So what I was doing with these little kids, unbeknownst to me, this is, you know, Navy SEAL resiliency tool or whatever. But after we got all intense with the actual combative part of wrestling, we would sit in a circle with our eyes closed and imagine what it's like to walk onto the mats at a tournament. And imagine, so I would kind of guide the kids through, okay, you're going to now, with your eyes closed, imagine that you're looking down and you can see your feet stepping onto the mat, and you can feel your heart starting to increase a little bit. You can feel your fingertips starting to tingle. You know a fight is coming. So when I started to research one of those tools, mental rehearsal, when I first got on with the fire department, I mean, like weeks in, I wasn't even allowed to respond to pages yet. But I would take my pager to the station, go and sit on the truck, just solo at like 8 o'clock at night, and play out one of the tones. And sit there with my eyes closed and try to imagine what it would be like stepping off the truck into that scene. What kinds of things am I going to have to bump into here? What am I going to have to prepare my eyes for to see? And what am I going to have to prepare my heart for to feel? You know, so on the flip side of the intensity that comes with things like jujitsu and rucking and the aggressive action that we need to take on scene, there's all kinds of room on the other side too, right? For making sure we can get our mind right in those moments of calm, you know? So I'm going to take those big four principles or those tools and bring our attendees through at a jiu-jitsu club the process of breaking away from somebody that's trying to hold us, right? Just like trauma holds us. And then once we know how to do that, we now know if somebody's holding me or if I'm being held, let's say, I already possess the skill to get away from this. And now it's just about using those big four tools in a particular order, right, to set ourselves about getting away, you know?
Sure. Very, very, very well said. Very well put. And so apropos for this job that we do, again, whether career or volunteer doesn't make any difference, but we do a job.
Yeah.
And it's important that we are ready to do this job. And the only way we can do that is if we set our goals to be the best that we can be.
Amen.
All right, we're gonna, exactly. All right, we're going to take a break here, folks. If you're watching the video, you're not going to see anything that looks any different. If you're listening to the audio, well, you know what happens. We'll play a couple of announcements or public service announcements, and then we'll be back with my guest, firefighter Bill Dungy, from the cool land of Canada, as we talk about his website, which I have it up on the podcast. I'm going to share the screen when we come back, just so you see what it looks like. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the wedge, the principles behind it. And we're going to talk about Bill's dedication to, I just want to make sure I say it correctly, the Canadian Association for Mental Health. So we'll be right back right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. The tone sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lei, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their task to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
Hey, I'm Joey Logano with Joe Gibbs Racing. The job of these firefighters is even tougher and more dangerous than mine. But we both rely on custom precision machinery to get us where we're going. And a small mistake, or a fraction of a second, can be the difference between life and death. Like these firefighters, my family expects me to come home from my job. I wouldn't think for a moment about getting in this bad boy without my seatbelts and other safety devices. I can't imagine anyone getting into one of these trucks without buckling up. And watch your speed so you can maintain control. If I don't cross the finish line, I don't win. And if you don't get to the scene, everybody loses.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it, and you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey, guys, you call out. I'm not feeling well. And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC-SHS websites.
Hello and welcome back to this episode of 5 Alum Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. And with me is my guest, Bill Dungy. He is a volunteer firefighter in the County of Brant Fire Department. Now, you're in Ontario, right?
That's right.
In the province of Ontario. Where are you relative to Toronto, for example?
About an hour west as the crow flies, but anywhere from 2 hours or more, depending on what time you leave and hit the highway.
That's the traffic. Right. Okay. All right. So we're talking with Bill today about this. I don't even know. I was going to say a principle, this program. It's a combination of thought and it's actually mind body. I mean, when you really think of it, it's this, your idea of the wedge and what you're, this other part you're teaching with it is really a mind body exercise. And because you're not going to grab the physicality if you don't understand the mentality of what you're doing and why you're doing it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this comes from a personal experience of mine. Another thing I'm passionate about is speaking about postpartum depression in men. And that's an aside here, but I went through this weird chapter of my life where right after my son was born, I just got super anxious for no reason. Like it just crept into my brain, like some weird little creature. And I used to weigh about 110 pounds more than I do now. And I reached a point, luckily, like really luckily. Again, I don't know how this happened, but my son was just in the room next to me running around like little kids do. And I got winded, like chasing him around and playing with him. And I got all of the sudden immediately fed up with my whole circumstance. So I just started like literally, there's no embellishment here. I put winter boots on. We were just heading out of winter. I put winter boots on and tried to run around the block. I got just down to the corner where the park is, and that was a wrap on that idea, which made me even more fed up with my situation. And I started to make little tiny changes toward being the person that I've become today. And so the wedge is a culmination of that experiment and figuring out like, okay, it's all well and fine to eat chicken and rice and red pepper, but if your mind's not set right, you don't have a why. You don't have a correctly focused aim. And I know personally that it's possible to aim incorrectly. And I don't think people like hearing that like, if you have set out a goal for yourself incorrectly, it's going to be really, really hard to hit. And when we hit goals, we build this little platform for winning. And when we win over and over again, that's what keeps us, you know, pushing that Sisyphus rock up the hill, because it's like, well, we got another step in, so maybe we can get one more in, you know. And the wedge is designed overall and scaled so that I can help people aim correctly.
I think that's an imperative to the whole concept.
Yeah.
Of who we are and what we do. I can feel quite a bit from what you mentioned about the anxiousness for a new dad. Again, when our first daughter was born, after some triumph and difficulties, but when she was born, my wife had a tough time, after she was born, and I was working 80 hours and a volunteer, and I had to find a way that I didn't feel that I had a rubber band around each crooked in each arm. Actually three. It's one pulling me to my job, one pulling me to the fire department, and the big one around my waist pulling me to stay at home to be with my wife and help her. Although she, you know, she's with both our kids, she only took 6 weeks off. Boom, she was back to work. That's just her, who she is as a teacher as well. She didn't want to take more time off because she felt very comfortable within those 6 weeks for each of the kids and was able to resume her professional and still be a wonderful, loving mother and wonderful wife. But there is, you know, medically I was okay with her because I was already AMT, et cetera. So I, you know, medically, we had a great doctor. We were near the hospital, wasn't a problem, but I just said, medically, I'm okay. I'm ready for this. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, in my heart, I was going to be a father, but I wasn't ready for everything that happens right after the baby.
Me so either.
So we were both learning on a daily basis what we had to do, because there was nobody, especially back in those days. I mean, she just turned 40. So there weren't people doing classes on how to be a good father for your expectant wife. It just come in and you have to go through these classes with your wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, learn all the exercises and stuff like that. That part was easy, but emotionally there's no preparation for a husband really.
Yeah.
For the husband of the family.
Yeah.
Okay. I shouldn't say male anymore. That's improper. But it was difficult. And I think that the fact that here you are quite a bit younger than I am, and you're still talking about it, means that this is a reality that a lot of men go through, but don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I do. It's reality. And
exactly.
It's one of
our
those
job
things
is about reality.
Yeah. It's whenever I hear that somebody's about to have their first baby, that's an automatic, okay, we're going out for a coffee because there's some stuff you need to know that just doesn't get translated very well without it.
Exactly. I as far as redoing yourself, I tried it many, many times, not very successful, but back in 2017, my weight was up to almost 230, and I wasn't going to have it anymore. And I simply started walking. Small amounts, distances at first. Then I built up so that I was out every morning, 5:30 in the morning. I stepped out the front door and I was up to 2 miles. Now I have a bad back condition and I got a new device put in for that. I had a medication pump inserted. But that was summer of 17. So by November, December, I was walking 2 to 2.5 miles in an hour and a quarter in my neighborhood. And then I was more careful about what I was eating. The weight was coming off and I was feeling better because
you don't say.
some of you may know for every 10 pounds on your abdomen, that's 30 pounds of stress on your spine. So I dropped nearly. Neither did I until one of the physicians that was guiding me told me that. And my pain management doctor told me that. And I started losing the weight and watching what I was eating and eating better, eating healthier. And that weight started to come off. And I started feeling on a moment by moment basis, less pressure on, less pain from my back.
Yeah.
And by the end of April, beginning of May of 2018, I had dropped nearly 40 pounds. And wow, I was a much healthier person. Unfortunately, with this malady I told you about, the mystery malady from November of 2020, I lost nearly 25 pounds in just 3.5 weeks.
Yeah,
because I couldn't keep anything down. I could barely keep water down. But I finally, we got that managed, but we still didn't know what it was. But now I'm on, like I said, now I'm on meds. But the fact is that one of the things that hurts me the most when I see videos or pictures of the fire service is I see the men and women who are significantly overweight. I'm not talking about 5 pounds, 10 pounds. Because if we do that, we're putting ourselves at hazard. We're putting our colleagues at hazard.
Yeah, darn right.
This is not an easy job to do physically. Yeah. You're waving for traffic on an MVC. Okay, sure. But you're working, doing a search in a house fire. And, you know, you got supposedly a 45-minute tank on. You're lucky if you get 15, 17 minutes out of it because of the way you're breathing. And again, you're part of one of the parts of the wedge is going to teach basically people how to basically help control that breathing so that they are able to do their job and conserve a little bit of the air without sucking it all down in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And we have to know that pressure is not just in our minds, but there are pressures on our body. And if we're not ready to deal with those pressures, how are we going to do that search?
One of the terms I bumped into recently is the phrase tactical athlete. And I think that's
I think that might have been Nick. Maybe it was Nick, because as a college athlete,
I'm not sure, it's just floating around in my brain, you know. One of the things I'm trying to negotiate right now, not with anybody, just within my own thinking, is that the volunteer fire service has this challenge, right? A baked-in challenge that it's difficult to recruit and it's difficult to retain.
Yeah.
So how, and this is the question that, you know, pops into my brain when I'm driving through town or whatever, how can you recruit people who have a vested interest in operational readiness, which encompasses mind, body, and craft, right?
Right.
And then how can you apply pressure to those people to make them want to progress those parts of themselves while being sensitive to retaining those people? Because if you apply too much pressure, they'll just leave. Because they'd be like, I didn't sign up for this. I'm going to use air quotes here, just a volunteer firefighter. And so I think there's that's an interesting dilemma that maybe isn't faced as closely by career departments as it is in volunteer departments, but that's definitely floating around my brain when it comes to physical fitness. Or, you know, physical fitness should be the price of admission. What I'm talking about here is, you know, physical readiness for the elements of the job that require you to be gassed up and ready to go.
Sure.
You know?
A past guest of the show and big supporter, Chief Anthony Correa, we did an episode about retention and recruitment in the fire service. And he was the one who taught me this, and I thank him all the time for it, is that he said, Steve, it should be retention and recruitment. Because if we can't keep the people we have, how are we going to entice others to join?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, you know, Chief, I never, ever thought of it that way. But you're absolutely right. Because somebody has an interest and they walk in and they see three people walking out the door saying, I'm never going back to that station again.
Yeah.
That's going to give you pause to say, uh-oh, what am I getting myself into? But if we take care of the people we have who are donating their time to us, some, again, might be part pay, but basically donating themselves, their time away from whatever, away from family, away from friends, away from the job when necessary. And they're willing to do this. It's our obligation as an organization to keep them interested in the organization, make them an active part of it so that they can go out and say, hey, you know, we've talked about, I'm a volunteer firefighter, but you know, we're going to have an interesting training and you can come if you like, just to watch. You don't have to participate, but you can watch us and hey, that might be it. And, you know, I never even looked at it that way until he brought it up in that discussion. And it's so true. We are having both in both countries, we're having difficulties with having enough volunteers to man our station. And, you know, society has changed greatly in the 45 years since I was on the job. But, you know, now we have most families, we have both parents working.
At least
one is probably working a second job. Sometimes both are working second jobs to pick up extra money, just to take care of the kids. And there's all these after school activities today that we didn't have back in those days, even though we didn't have kids when I started out. But it's a hell of a challenge in today's world to be a volunteer firefighter. But if you set your mind to it, that you want to do it, and you're doing it for all the right reasons, then you'll make a place in your life to do it, or at least to go look into it, try it out maybe, and see. Yeah. Look, it's not for everybody. You and I both know that, and every firefighter who's listening to this podcast and their spouse knows about it. Okay, that's what we face, and it's not just volunteers. We know career people who, it's the same thing, and they leave to go to a different department. But the fact is that if we don't understand what the cost is and be willing to spend it, you know, mm-hmm. we'll go to the movies and drop $30 per person for a movie and a popcorn and a drink, but we're afraid to spend some time as a volunteer in an organization in our community, because it's, you know, there's no rectification between those two polar opposites.
Yeah.
Sorry to use the term polar. We're talking with Canada, but but the fact is that it is important that we are willing to commit ourselves to what we sign on the paper for. And if we're not willing to do that, I don't know. I just think this hopefully will be another door that you will be valuable for.
It's not a hobby, Steve.
Exactly. Exactly. And it cannot be treated as that. That's the most important part. All right. So we have to wrap it up, but I want to talk about this other important part that it just hit me as I reread your bio that you sent me, which is your connection. You're a trainer, not connection. You are a trainer for the Resilient Minds program developed by the Canadian Association for Mental Health.
That's right.
So you're new to the volunteer fight, relatively new to the volunteer fire service. Where did you get that push, that inkling that you wanted to help in the mental health of what we do?
Well, as I said, so here's my first, I guess, bad call, if you want to say it that way, was really relatively new, and that's me saying that. So like, I was like right. new.
Yeah.
We had a plane crash here in the county.
Oh, wow.
And I was on the first in truck, and I remember getting off the truck and being, as soon as I turned towards the scene, I was like, holy, like this is going to be a real one. And we dealt with the scene. It was my first time dealing with a barely viable patient. And we got back to the station. I'm really lucky in the sense that my district chief values things like SISM and things like peer support. He actually organized a night where all of our spouses could come in to receive a training about like, here's what your spouse is going to interact with, that kind of thing. So we had a formal debriefing, and 25 minutes later, I was at home reading Harry Potter to my son, like for bedtime. And I distinctly remember there was like this gap of time where I had finished the debriefing. I signed off with everybody. Okay, see you guys later. I left. I drove home. I got in. I got into my son's room. And then I like woke up when I was actually reading Harry Potter, complete with voices for the characters as I normally do. But I like woke up and I just went like, oh, I don't even remember getting here. Or like there was no process to compile what I had just experienced. And I just, you know, one thing, next thing, next thing, next thing. So pretty much after that, I just started Googling formal resiliency program, firefighter Canada, and just looked up like what training is available. So I have a handful of certifications from different agencies within Canada that deal with first responder trauma and things like that. I went through the IFF's peer support program and got the training to be on a CISM team. I haven't even been with the department long enough to be on the CISM team, but I got the courses ready to, you know, go on the team. And it just struck me as this thing, like it's up to you. And it's like, we hope you'll be okay kind of thing. As I said, when we first got talking today, and hope is not a good plan.
Right.
So I found the Resilient Minds program. And I think what's super interesting about the Resilient Minds program is that it was developed by firefighters for firefighters, and it's a peer-led program. So the instructors that have all been empowered by the Resilient Minds program are all internal. So it's not like you have, you know, a capital M mental health professional coming in to be like, oh, you poor firefighters, here's what we can do for you. It's completely peer-to-peer program, sorry. So they have a structure where I'm not just talking off the top of my head. They introduce concepts like, what should you be looking for in your peers who might be displaying signs of post-traumatic stress? They also show you examples of what that might look like in you. But also, and here's a crazy part about it, they have this whole segment on how to deal with the public when the public is intersecting with trauma.
Right.
And so actually, Movember, are you familiar with Movember?
Sure, yeah.
So Movember partnered with CAMH and brought this Resilient Minds trainer program to people who were involved with the fire department at this highly reduced rate to buy into the program. So that's how I got into the program, finished that up and brought it through to our department. And now it looks like in December, we're going to be hosting basically a talk for all of the officers in our department to say, hey, this is important. This is progressive, and here's what we're planning on doing, and see if we can get some buy-in to run the program with our department. But
that's great.
It's valuable, and there's great data that backs up the program. Like if you wanted to, I'm kind of a nerd in that way. Like I don't like signing on to things unless I've seen some concrete evidence.
Right.
And one of the figures they have on their main brochure is this staggering number of first responders in British Columbia, where this program was developed, that have received zero formal resiliency training. It's like in the high 80 percent range, you know, right, who have received zero formal resiliency. And so once again, we're just banking on, we're going to pop out all these police officers and EMS folk and firefighters and just be like, hey, I hope you figure this out over time spent in the field. And it's like, that's not the way to approach this thing. So
no, not at all.
I can't speak highly enough about it. The program was conducted over Zoom to train all of these trainers, and it was engaging and interactive. And believe me, I've done Zoom programs that are not engaging. So it was good. They had, you know, they have a really interesting display that they use to visualize what stress and trauma looks like. So they show you this empty jar, right? And then they put in a bunch of red stones and they say, those red stones are different for everybody. Some people only have three little tiny red stones. Some people have, you know, four or five fist size stones. And that's what we're all starting out with when we come to the fire service. That's what we've already experienced. And then we're going to add in things like, okay, you get married and you have a kid. Well, we'll put some green stones in there for future personal stuff. Then we're going to put in some purple stones for what we've experienced on the job so far. You know, it's starting to fill up this jar. Sure. And it's like, how much room do you have left for the future? You know, and so, you know, what we're trying to do here is, again, stones, bricks, whatever you want to call them, give people tools that they can use to limit the amount of stones we're adding to our jar, you know?
And when you mentioned about SISM, I mean, it's so important today as we've, you know, we're still kind of young with maybe behavior health issue is only probably, it's probably less than a decade old, you know, where the initiative to really focus on it. And, you know, I always, when we talk about SISM or lack thereof, is again, back in my day, was probably one of the worst calls I did in the 8 years I was serving before I got hurt. And when we got back to the firehouse, it was someone trapped in a vehicle in a MVC and the vehicle ignited because of the gas tank, et cetera. But anyway, he was still alive when we first got there and got water on there. We got him out. He was still alive when we got him out of the vehicle and he lived for 3 days and passed away in the burn center. But my buddy and I were on that call, came in about 1:30 in the morning. And it was only the two of us. The chief was screaming. It was right around the corner from his house. And he said, don't stop for a hydrant. Just give me the water you have. And we did. We got the fire out with just the 500 gallons that we had. But when I got back to the station, we cleaned up and everything like that. And then I took my bunker coat off, went into the locker room and puked my guts out, was crying. And I was just a mess. From this, and of course, the smell of burning flesh is something you'll never forget, and I hope never most of you, if you've done it, haven't, will never have to deal with it. So I came out of the locker room, and the guy who drove, he's one of our day, what we call caretakers. They work 24 on, 48 off to get the first apparatus out, the first new apparatus out. And he said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Was it the call?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, suck it up."
Yeah.
That was back in 1977, 78. That was the thinking.
Yeah.
Just suck it up. And I don't know for sure, but I can guarantee you that there are thousands of brothers who, of that time, brothers and sisters, who were not able to suck it up and just turn around and keep a happy smile on the face and just walk out the door saying, okay, that's just one call. It's out of my way. Can't do that.
Yeah.
You know,
we're human, right?
Yeah. These are very important to us because we all make little mistakes. We have these little erasers on the end of pencils. You can't erase an image that's seared into your brain, you know? And my buddy and I, 45 years later, whenever we're together, we always talk about that call. Is there something else we could have done? Even though the chief gave us all sorts of glory and thanks for doing what we did and getting there and getting the water, just using the first water to get it that out and everything, get him out of the truck. But that doesn't erase. There is no eraser for that image in my mind or his mind.
Yeah.
There was no SISM in those days. There was no after action reviews or anything like that. It wasn't even discussed. We were back in the day room after we had all washed up and everything. Here it was like 2:30, quarter of three in the morning. And everybody shooting the breeze, like we were just hanging there for lunch hour. But it was eating away at me. And I finally just got up and excused myself to the table, went back to sleep because I had to work Sunday morning. But I only wish that there was something, somewhat, someone, any of those around those days.
Yeah.
For what I needed when I needed it. And for thousands and thousands of our brothers and sisters who have gone through it since that didn't know where to turn. Mm-hmm. You know, thank goodness we have both the firefighter cancer initiatives and the mental health initiatives are ongoing now. And it's important, very important. And nobody, if you're listening or watching, no one should ever feel uncomfortable because you want to reach out for help. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, as I was taught by my first person that I went to speak with, you're stronger when you look for help rather than weaker.
Yeah. Well, there's this whole thing about in every course I've taken, every person like yourself I've spoken to, that we start hedging toward this whole like stigma thing about, you know, that it's okay to reach out for help kind of thing. Well, put it this way. If you slipped off the sidewalk, okay, and tweaked your ankle, fell down and busted your leg or something like that, you're darn right you'd be calling out for help, right? Yep. So like, there's no difference. If you need help, it's when you're saying about the whole suck it up mentality, man, we're human beings, right? Like there's a certain type of human that steps off the line toward something like the fire service or police services or EMS or the military. There's a certain type of person, but at the end of the day, we're just human beings.
Exactly. You know?
So there is and can be no other way to describe it. If you're in deep water, put your hand up.
Yep, absolutely. You're talking to a former lifeguard. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah.
without a doubt. Without a doubt. Bill, this has been fascinating. I am, again, my thanks to Nick for putting you and I together. I'm going to bring up, folks, I'm going to share the screen. I want you to see Bill's website here very quickly. This is it, The Wedge. What better time than now? I can't think of a better way for you to phrase it. Because if you're not willing to work to say now, I want to get better. I want to be a better person. I want to be a better firefighter. I want to be a better cop. I want to be a better EMT or paramedic. Whatever you do, you have to say, I want to learn. And here's the website. You can see, you download it for free. He has a lot of information of what brought it back. Talks about rucking, which I didn't know anything about until I read his website. So, you know, this at the bottom is probably the best because this is the best way to close the show. Divide and fortify. You already know what to do. You're just saying, I can't do it. Well, if you're already thinking about it, you can do it.
It's not a hobby, Steve. Head,
huh? Right?
It's not a hobby.
Exactly. It's not a hobby. Bill, thanks so very much. I really appreciate this. I'm thinking of something else that you and I will talk about off the air, but this was a whole new approach. And I've had a lot of people talking about different sorts of help for fire service and EMS and police. Actually, I think she's in Canada, 911 Lifestyle, Andy Clark, I think is her name. It's called 911lifestyle.com. She was a guest on the show. And her husband I think she's in Toronto. And I think her husband is a police officer in Toronto. And it was some of the things that he was going through that kind of stirred her to there's got to be a way to provide help. And she does 911 Lifestyle. So that might be something you'd like to check into. But this was great. I think it's so timely. We're dealing with, as we talked about, yes, we do have the firefighter mental health initiative, behavioral health initiative, but it's more than that. We still need to get help out to the people not only people who ask for it, but we have to kind of be willing to spot and say, so are you okay? Is everything all right? You don't have to be their minister. You don't have to be, you know, their psychiatrist. But if a friend of yours, a coworker of yours, you're seeing is not doing, seems not to be doing well, if you don't take that first step, because you would for a stranger, you do every day for a stranger. So how do you not maybe take that step towards your comrade, your colleague, and say, you okay? Is everything all right? And I think what you're sharing, what you're doing both with the Wedge and working with people for Resilient Minds program. I love this, the concept of it. And resiliency is really a definition of who we are as firefighters. You know, we might just have it on the calls and then we don't show it in our personal lives, but I don't think you can really separate them. I don't think there's a black curtain that drops between the two. If you're a first responder, it never does, because you're always a first responder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the key. You're always willing to do what needs to be done, when needs to be done, whether you're on shift or you're off shift, because that's the kind of people we are. So I think I would like to recommend this to, you know, if you're a listener or a viewer, please go to visit the website. And we have, again, we'll give you this and we'll put it in the bio as well on the website, this URL, https://6feet, just like it sounds like, the spelled out, SIXFEET.ca, for short for Canada, CA. And you can learn a lot there. You can touch base with Bill. I'm sure he answers his emails, because he's very good at answering his emails for me. So I think that you can learn more and make yourself a little stronger of mind, if not necessarily body. But I think that the whole, you should visit the website and see the whole thing that the Wedge offers. And I think that, you know, as we promote firefighter fitness in every podcast, in lots of our public service announcements, that this is a great place for you to go to look for a new, and, you know, I'm going to have to say, from definitely looking around as much as I do on the internet for fire-related websites, this is one of the very interesting ones, because I think it offers you something that I don't think anybody else is offering at this moment. And it's something you can do on your own, with others, form a group, whatever. It's going to be your call once you talk with Bill and correspond with him and see what he's offering here with the Wedge. I just think it's a great tool that we can't carry in our tool belts, but boy, we can sure carry it in our hearts and minds to follow through with, to be better at what we do and to be better people as well.
Yeah, certainly. Thanks for the opportunity. I look forward to this all weekend. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, I am 6foxtrot on Instagram, SIXFOXTROT, or 6feet.ca.
All right. Bill, thanks very much. We really appreciate it. Bill Dungy, volunteer firefighter up in Canada, and a person who cares, really cares, not about just his department, but about the fires, the health and the wealth of knowledge for the fire service. No, actually, no matter what country you live in and you serve in it, this information is good for you.
Even you Americans.
Even us Americans. Right. There we go. There we go. Had to get one dig in. Okay. There we go. We got it in. All right. Stay cold. I mean, stay well. And thanks again, Bill. I'll talk to you about the other thing we're going to have off the air. All right. I'm thinking about. All right, folks. If you're watching the video, this will be the end of the video. We thank you for tuning in. If you're listening to the audio, you know, as usual, there'll be another segment that comes off, not with our guests, so regular segment of the podcast that comes on right after this. So thanks for tuning in, folks. We're glad to have you. We'll be back next week with another great podcast. As always, stay safe and stay well. Bye-bye now. You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your SISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you, start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
Now I'm, trying to get better, stronger than ever.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Steve. You know, this podcast, which is dedicated to all of our brothers and sisters currently in the fire service, retired, disabled, and those we lost. We know this job can really be difficult sometimes. What we see that we don't want other people to have to see, the job, the exhaustion, the shift work, etc. But there are always those who persevere and shine through. You may have heard about a gasoline tanker that crashed and exploded on the Florida Turnpike just over a week ago. And the tanker was cut off. The driver swerved to avoid the car, turned over, and the tanker ignited. The driver did survive, but the fire from the explosion overtook several other vehicles. In one of them was a Broward County firefighter, Ryan Aparicio. He made it out. He escaped from the car with severe burns. And then he went back to rescue his girlfriend, who suffered burns on her arms and legs. Brian is still in the hospital. As you probably heard on the video cast and on this audio prior, we've been helping to send funds to make sure Brian, who has a long road ahead of him, has the money, some money at least, to help go on day after day. His Broward County Fire and Rescue brothers and sisters are there. We sent a generous donation from our foundation account to help them out. And we hope you will too. There is a GoFundMe that you can look for. Account online, Brian Aparicio and his girlfriend. And you can make a donation to help them out. This is not what Brian ever expected. He just did his job as a firefighter day in and day out. And he looks forward to returning to be able to do that, God willing. But in the meantime, we need to help them. So please go to the look up the GoFundMe page for Brian Aparicio and do what you can do. Because these are the people that answer those 911 calls. These are our colleagues. These are our brothers and sisters. And that's my view. Oh, yeah. Stay safe and stay well.
We're really glad to have you listening to Five Alarm Task Force. But we also want you to know there's some other terrific fire service podcasts available. Here's the short list. Cammon Radio with Lieutenant Jason Liska. B-Shifter with Chief John Vance. The Professional Brotherhood with Chief Brian Soller. Flow and Vent. B-A-R, Brotherhood Academy Radio with Nick Hilton and crew. DTFF, Down to Fight Fire, British Columbia Volunteers. SA Matters, Situational Awareness Matters with Chief Richard Gassaway. Jump Seat Radio with Captain Ryan Pennington. Pin the Cue. Drone Responders. Make Do with Captain Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy. Thin Red Line with Battalion Chief John Hayowick. Fire Rescue Show. Average Jake Firefighter. Fit to Fight Fire. Remember, to be a great firefighter, you must be always willing to learn. This message is brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. One mission, one family. First responders helping each other.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You will be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate? Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and 5 Alarm Task Force.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alum Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alum Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, firefighter Bill Dungy, for joining us to discuss resilience and his concept for The Wedge. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alum Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, the Firehouse Tribune, and LifeScan Wellness Centers, as well as our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Responder Wipes, Haz Alert, Nestabars, the EFT Corporation, 911lifestyle.com, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5 Alarm Task Force, on Facebook at facebook.com /5 A Apple, T Tango, F Foxtrot, C Charlie. And on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Till next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.